weather stays warm, highs between 82 and 85. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 67 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Alright, good morning everybody and welcome into the Gary Harris Show for this Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. I'm your host, Gary Harris. Chase Brumfield alongside Manning the Controls, taking your phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. We gotta do a little house cleaning right off the bat here because I come in this morning, I'm still in pregame mode, you know, over there sipping on my water, you know, listening to Barry holler, and he had done the trivia, his trivia, and he hits me with it. You know, who's Alabama's all-time leading rusher? I know you know, and I do know. But, I mean, you saw me, Chase. I nearly jumped out of my seat. He scared me to death. And before I could even process the question, because I had to go through the fact that for a long time it was Bobby Humphrey and then Sean Alexander. Then Sean Alexander held on to it for a long time until Derrick Henry. And I would have gotten, Najee Harris. I do know Najee Harris is all-time leading rusher. And then he's like, well, you don't even know. I do know. You just have to. He's trying to intimidate me. Make me look bad, Chase. You know? Because you know I know that stuff. But yeah, but there's a process to go through to get to the top because if you go through Alabama's list of all-time leading rushers now in the top 10, most of them are going to be under Nick Saban. That's just the reality of it. Because of, you know, the kind of players that he brought in here. You know, for prior to Bobby Humphrey, for a long time, 15, 20 years or so, it was Johnny Musso. And then it started, you know, then you got Sean Alexander. And then after that, I take that back because now I'm looking at the list. I always forget about Kenneth Darby. Kenneth Darby's in the top 10. And, but the number of these guys that played for Saban, Harris, Henry, Yeldon, Ingram, Richardson, another Harris, Damian Harris, all played for Nick Saban. So out of the top 10 rushers of all time for Alabama, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them played, might even been 7, I might have missed one. 6 of them played for Nick Saban. Let's see, the other 4 would be Alexander, Humphrey, Darby, and Musso. Yeah, so 6 of them played for Nick Saban. So you got to process and go through those. Now, in fairness, too, give Najee Harris a lot of credit, but Najee Harris was a 4-year player. Had Derrick Henry played for another year, he would have over 5,000 yards probably. There's never been a 4,000-yard rusher in the history of Alabama football. Harris has 3,843 yards, if you're wondering. But Henry only played 3 years. Richardson only played 3 years. So, you know, keep that in perspective. But it is Najee Harris, and I just felt like I want to go ahead and clear that up because, you know, Barry tried to lay that on me that I didn't know, and I did know. So, anyway, let's get back to the show for today, the Gary Harris Show. Tide 100.9 FM, 1230 AM, WTBC is brought to you, as always, by Alabama Credit Union. And Alabama Credit Union welcomes Alabama River Credit Union. Alabama River CU in Monroeville is now part of Alabama Credit Union. Learn more about the merger and how your Alabama River accounts have become part of Alabama Credit Union. Go to alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com. Alabama Credit Union. Loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership. Enjoy today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, the lineup for today is a good one. The coach, Ellis Johnson, coming up at 9:30. Will Miller from Bama Central coming up to talk Braves and Bama at 10. And then Jeff Spiegel, ABC 3340 Sports Anchor at 10:30. Right now, let's go ahead and jump out on the phone lines. And we're going to get to Tom, and then we're going to get to Corey here. And we'll probably get to Tom before the break and then hold Corey for after the break. Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hey, I didn't want to hold Corey up. I didn't know he was calling. Because I love his phone calls, and I think he's one of the best callers that you got. He's always got the right information. You ever notice that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's always on point. But anyway, I was going to say, Barry was acting crazy this morning.
Well, he was, wasn't he? When I got here, he was acting crazy. He was hollering.
He was like, yeah, he screamed at me, screamed at Coach multiple times this morning. I don't know what he had
you
last
think he's
night.
On, you think he's on steroids?
No, but I think that he ate some mice at Taco Taco last night, and they gave him some revolutionary Mexican beans or something. I don't know. But I know this much. I was quoting Casey on golf. We were trying to have a conversation about the Ryder Cup and what's come out afterwards, what it was. Same thing that Casey said, they set the course up, you know, to the advantage of the Europeans. I called in. Me and Coach were talking about it. He started telling us that the Europeans didn't even try Sunday. They could care less if they were so far ahead. They didn't worry about it. I said, you're crazy. They don't play like that. They go for the jugglers. They wanted to win as much as they could. Plus, they all had money on the golf game they were playing because it was individual, right or wrong.
Yeah, I don't can't believe he even said that. They cared. They wanted to win all those singles matches. They wanted to bury the United States. As it turned out, they were they hung on for dear life, man.
And I told Coach what Casey said about the green.
Yeah, too soft.
They were faster. They were faster, and the Americans performed better because the greens were faster. And Barry was hollering at me and him about that wasn't true, and saying that the Europeans could have cared less, and they knew they had it, and this, that, and the other. Anyway, I was calling to let you know, don't feel alone. He nailed us, too.
Oh, I know. He was ready. He was aggressive this morning. I mean, when he hollered at me, it stunned me a little bit. Normally, I probably popped out from him, but I looked in his eyes, and I was like, he may want to fight.
That's funny.
He's got the potential for violence this morning. So
anyway, let me get out of the way. So Corey, I want to hear what he's got to say.
All right, I had to calm down here. I didn't want to. What do you think about it, Chase?
Oh my Lord!
All right, thank you, Tom. It's 11 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and as I said, we got a great lineup today and a lot to cover this morning. I am going to get into the Diego Pavia comments from yesterday in depth and give you my thoughts on why it's a win-win for Diego Pavia to pop off the way he is. I'll tell you all about that. But we'll come back on the other side. We'll get to Corey and Trustful. I want to give Corey plenty of time because, like Tom says, he's always a very thoughtful caller and always has a lot on his plate. So we'll let Corey take over the phone lines on the other side of the break. And later on, as I said, I'll get into this Diego Pavia. You know, why he feels so, I guess, confident and why it's really, as I said, a win-win for him. We'll have that topic on the table as well. All right, we'll be back with more of the Gary Harris Show. We're off and running. If you want to join us on the program, 205-342-9904. This hour being brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. We're coming right back.
What's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good Thursday morning. The Walker County Commission's decision to not renew the inmate medical catastrophic insurance policy is putting the county at financial risk. That according to Sheriff Nick Smith, he's warning that any major health emergency such as heart surgery or cancer treatment will now be funded entirely by the county's general fund and thus the taxpayers. Click TuscaloosaThread.com for more West Alabama news, sports, and weather throughout the day. It's absolutely free. Don Hartley, Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three Spoons.
I'm Tom Osmond, your jeweler at Fincher & Osmond Jewelers. Not so easy to find on McFarland, between Edgar's and local routes.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big-screen, high-definition televisions in both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside on the beautiful patio. Come by and say hello to Kim and Lisa, the Billy's management dream team. Billy's, good food, good friends, and good time.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal
loans. In the house. The Fair and Sports Radio Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC. You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
Listening, because normally he would have texted me by now, but having a little fun there in that first segment. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. It's 9:16, and we're going to jump out on the Gary Harris Show hotline and talk with our buddy Corey over there in Trustful. Hey, Corey.
Good morning, Gary. How are you this morning?
Doing well.
Well, I can't wait to hear you speak to Jeff Spiegel, because I'm very interested to hear what he says about this Hewitt-Thompson game. And
okay.
I can't wait to hear what he says about it. Something I found out yesterday, Hewitt is number one in Class 7A, and that is the first time they have been number one since 1991.
Oh, wow.
And I was shocked. And Thompson's number three. I just hope Hewitt doesn't go in there overwhelmed, you know, because here's the thing. Thompson knows they can beat Hewitt because Thompson's won the last seven. Hewitt, I would hope they don't think, because, you know, this reminds me of the Tennessee-Alabama rivalry when they went in there 2022. Alabama knows they can beat Tennessee. Tennessee thinks they can beat Alabama. But that year, Tennessee did beat Alabama. Certain things went their way. Yes, there might have been some questionable officiating at the time, but Tennessee did make some plays. For Hewitt, they were going to need to make some plays. Thompson won five out of the last six championships, and they've won five. And it's no mistake. It's not a fluke. They're a very good team. They're still the favorite to win 7A. And really, regardless of what happens, it doesn't change the outcome of the season. But, of course, I'm pulling for my team. I'm just saying that if Hewitt wants to win this game, they're going to have to not make mistakes and capitalize on Thompson mistakes if they make them and use the home crowd to their advantage.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. That's a good analogy. You know, the fact that Thompson got beat last week, I don't think it's a good thing for Hewitt. I think it probably would have been better if Thompson had won that game against Clay Chalkville, because they don't lose two in a row very often, if ever. But it should be a great game. I'm with you. I think that I definitely think Hewitt's good enough to win the game. Of course, I was wrong last week. I thought Thompson would beat Clay Chalkville. I think Thompson will win the game tomorrow night. I do. I just think that, being at home and have coming off of a loss, I just think that they'll find a way to win the game. But I've been wrong before, Corey, including last week. So, you know, we'll see.
Did you get my message of all the players that made the quarter century team for softball?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, thanks for sending that to me. That was cool, man. That was cool. Absolutely.
There were a lot of SEC. Of course, if you go to D1softball.com, it's a free article. You'll see all the players that made it. A lot of SEC teams. I don't know if you might recognize some of the. You'll recognize some of the players.
Mm-hmm.
There were some of the players I didn't even know who they were, but, you know, Hannah Rogers, Lauren Chamberlain, Lauren Hager, Kelly Barnhill, Monica Abbott, Carlin Pickens made it. Just to name a few.
Yeah.
Of course, I was making sure Kelly credits to me. She didn't make it. Of course, that would be sacrilegious if she didn't.
Right,
make it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think Alabama had six players and Florida had six players. I think Oklahoma had six players, which led all teams.
Yeah. Your top program is going to have the most players. Did you see this, too? An interesting Alabama softball note. Abby Dutcher is going to play softball this spring for her fourth year, and then she's going to use her fifth year to play basketball somewhere, college basketball. Did you see that?
But she's playing basketball here.
Is it going to be here?
Yes.
She didn't say that it was going to be. I didn't see that.
I thought that meant.
I'm excited to share that I will be exploring the opportunity to play college basketball for the 2026-2027 season. She didn't say anything about Alabama. I don't know if she's good enough to play here.
Would that not make sense? Because softball runs over into basketball.
Well, she wouldn't play basketball until next season. Next season, her fifth year. She used her fifth year. And that's always been a rule. Now, everything gets confused now with how many. But you've always had 4 years to play one sport. But if you wanted to play another sport in a fifth year, you could use it if you didn't redshirt. Keith McKellar, a tight end at basketball player at Jacksonville State, did that for 1 year at tight end, went on to play in the NFL. So she's going to play not this season. She'll play softball in the spring, and then she'll start her basketball career next year, next fall, next summer, after softball.
Not that I have a problem with game day being at Alabama, but this is just my opinion on this. I would have liked to have seen game day going to Miami, Florida State, and have college game day come back to Alabama for a bigger game. The reason why I say that is, I think game day is coming to Alabama because of Vanderbilt being undefeated.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, Florida State got beat by Virginia. If Florida State beats Virginia, they go to Tallahassee. Secondly, it's not just that Vanderbilt's undefeated, but it's that Vanderbilt beat Alabama last year, and Alabama's coming off the win over Georgia, and Alabama wants a crack at Vandy. Diego Pavia talked smack last year before the game, during the game, and after the game. He's talking smack now. It's a huge game. It's got a lot of interest. There's a lot of people that are buying into Vanderbilt being able to come in here and win. So I get it. I think that you have to, like I said, you have to readjust your thinking. This is now a big game. And you know, who's to say that Alabama won't lose one? What game is going to be bigger on down the line than this one right now? This is a huge game. It's got a lot of national interest. Vanderbilt's a Cinderella story. So I get it. I understand it. But, you know, things had to happen last week. Alabama had to beat Georgia. Florida State had to lose to Virginia. And when those two things happened, they decided to come to Tuscaloosa for the Vanderbilt game. And I understand it. So, hey, great phone call as always, Corey. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, I got it 49-17.
So you got Bama in a blowout?
Yeah, I think Alabama's going to make Pavia eat his words because I think Alabama's going to put the clamp on him and show who Alabama really is.
Okay, I appreciate that. We'll see. For sure, but that sounds good. I think most Bama fans would take it. Thank you, Corey.
Good to talk to you, Gary. Roll Tide.
All right. All right, let's get to Diego Pavia. For, being a guy that does not back off, and now you got the Johnny Manziel thing coming in here with him, this guy is just... he won again in court too. You know, he won that, because he wasn't even supposed to be playing college football this year. He wasn't even supposed to be playing. And he's supposed to be out of eligibility. And he applied, I think it was a former Vanderbilt cheerleader that helped him, who's now a lawyer, apply for, to get this extra year. And now they're talking about he may try to apply again for next year. But anyway, he had a temporary injunction allowing him to play, preliminary injunction. Now the three judges in federal appeals panel dismissed the NCAA's eligibility case against Diego Pavia. So now he doesn't have to worry about being pulled off the field at any point this season. So we kind of figured that anyway. But I don't get it. I don't understand how you can just decide I want to play another year and get it. But that's where we're at. And so there you go. But now let's get into what he said to Chris Lowe and why it's a no-brainer for him to be talking like this. Talking with Chris Lowe, the outstanding writer, formerly of ESPN, Knoxville News Sentinel, now on 3. He said, I know we've got to bring it, that's for sure. The crowd, I think, is going to be a big factor in the game, but we just got to play within the white lines. If we do that, if we play our game, it won't be close. So, if we play our game, we're going to blow Alabama out, basically what he said. And you don't usually see that kind of talk from players before they play Alabama, but he talked it last year. Castellanos talked it over the summer, and then they went out and won. Plus, if he wins, he's a legend. He's maximizing his earning potential wise at Vanderbilt. I don't know if he's going to play in the NFL or not, but if he wins, he's a legend. And if he loses, so what? You know what? It's still Vanderbilt. If they were to lose this game, then lose a couple more, people aren't going to be talking about them the way they are right now. So he's got everything to gain and very little to lose. He said what he said. We'll see if he can back it up. Let's get Digger on the hotline here. Hey, good morning, Digger.
Did you know how many seniors on that Vanderbilt team?
Well, they got a ton of they got a ton of graduate students. I mean, I think their average age for that team's like 23 or 24 years old. Yeah, they're an old team.
They're the oldest team in the country. Yep. It's 47 seniors and 27 graduates.
Isn't that something? But give them credit, man. They have taken advantage of these new rules more than any school in the country. Reshape their program.
I'm just saying. And then the thing is, they're not going to be the least bit intimidated. This is an old school. And they better be game on for this one. I'm telling you. Because I'm telling you, they're not the least bit threatened.
No, they're coming in to win. I agree with you. They're coming to win. Whole new program.
Yeah, that's why I got to look at the 14 points, man. I'm being serious. I mean, everybody's talking 49 and 7. I'm saying, come on, man. They're not going to let. They're going to get him. They're going to keep you in front of them. And I'm telling you, I know they haven't played anybody. Okay, but that coach over there, Lee, he's no dummy. He's got a plan for y'all, so it's going to be interesting, and that's why game day is there.
Absolutely.
It's an intriguing matchup.
So it's a very intriguing matchup. Yep.
Yeah.
I agree with everything you said. All right, thanks, Digger. Short and to the point. That's okay. All right, 9:29 here on the Gary Harris Show. Hey, the YMCA of Tuscaloosa. I was in there yesterday for a workout. Man, I just love that place. Sometimes, Chase, when I leave here, I don't even feel like working out. I'm like, but when I get to the Y, it just energizes me, man. It's like, yeah, baby. Glad I did this. You'll be glad that you did it, too. 2300 13th Street. Get by and see them. Jeff Knox, the CEO, all the great staff, all the personal trainers. I'm a big advocate for personal training. If you've hit the wall or for whatever reasons you can't reach your fitness goals, a personal trainer can help you. They've got some of the best right there at the YMCA of Tuscaloosa. The Y is ready for you when you're ready for the Y. All right, we're going to come back with the Coach Ellis Johnson next here on the Gary Harris Show.
Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
Want to know what's going on with the download the Tide 100.9 app today.
I paid attention last week when Coach said that he's not a big Hootie and the Blowfish fan, so I told Chase, let's change the intro music to another South Carolina band, Marshall Tucker Band. How about that, Coach?
I think you're cheating, man. My first job was in Gaffney, South Carolina, and my second job was in Spartanburg. I knew some of those guys.
How about that? What an awesome band. Well, from now on, Marshall Tucker Band is going to be your intro music. How's it going?
Going pretty good. Last week we had a slugfest. This week we got 7 open dates.
I know. It's interesting the way the schedule plays. Let's jump into some of these games last week, though, starting with Alabama and Georgia. Alabama, you know, gets another win over Kirby Smart. He's now 1-7 against the Tide. And first half offensively, Alabama was just clicking on all cylinders. Simpson, man, was unbelievable. They were converting third downs, 24 points. Didn't score in the second half. And the defense, which got gutted again against the run, made plays in the second half when they had to. You know, got the big fourth down stop. You know, in the first half had a turnover deep in, forced a turnover deep in Georgia territory. And the result, Bama gets out of there with a 24-21. What'd you think about it?
It was a great game. I thought that Alabama really won the football game and played better than the score indicates. I think Georgia had two things, had home field, and they have an unbelievable mentally tough approach and just wouldn't go away. But, Gary, they ran 24 more plays than Georgia. They had the ball 11 minutes more. They could not get effective pressure on Ty Simpson, and that was the difference in the ball game. Georgia usually smothers people up front, you know, disrupts a run, gets to the quarterback, and they don't have that quality of depth this year. And also, Simpson is just so good at knowing when he's getting pressured, when he's not protected, gets the ball out quick. I think Kirby even commented on that. So I think the score, this was a heck of a lot better win than it really even seemed like. I mean, playing at Georgia and doing so many things that way, they didn't have a single turnover playing in a hostile environment. So just only 4 penalties. You're playing in Athens, Georgia, with all that pressure, noise, and so forth. So, man, just so many things just go on and on and on. But I thought that was one of the more impressive wins this year.
Yeah, huge win for Alabama, no doubt about it. Sets them up now to be right back in the hunt for the playoff and national championship and all that. And we'll get to more with them in just a moment, obviously. Let's talk about the LSU and Ole Miss. For Ole Miss, too, I mean, you know, all of a sudden they're 5-0. They're 3-0 in the SEC. They've already got 3 conference wins. And to defeat LSU, you know, a rival and get to this point in the season, they've set themselves up, Ole Miss has, for a special season potentially.
Yeah, and I think the most impressive thing about this the way they did it with the backup quarterback. And the kids playing right now as well as the starter. So, you know, obviously Lane can coach quarterbacks. And taking this kid and accomplishing what they have with him the last 3 weeks is really unbelievable. LSU's got some problems. They cannot run the ball effectively. And on top of that, they didn't have a starting running back. And he hasn't been premier or anything, but they just didn't have the running game. And once they able to bring pressure on Nussmeier, he's just not mobile enough. You got to have a really good running game to help him, to be able to protect him, and overall, you know, have some kind of balance in the offense. But again, another game with tremendous difference in the number of snaps that each team got, and obviously in every other statistic, didn't even get 100 yards rushing, didn't even get the 300 yards total offense, and first downs for me always, I look at that sometimes the very first thing. If you don't at least get to 20, and I think 24 is kind of a magic number. If the team has 24 first downs, you know, it's kind of like 6 per quarter. They got a lot of possession, and they're protecting their defense and its field position and all the things. So sometimes that can be a pretty big indicator. And LSU got overwhelmed in that area too. So
a really good win by Ole Miss. I don't think it's quite as impressive as Alabama going into Georgia, but playing at home against a top five team before they got beat, a big win for Ole Miss. And they kind of sitting in the driver's seat, like you said.
Speaking of offensive issues, boy, Auburn's got a bunch of them right now. And you see 16-10 at Texas A&M, and you think, man, you know, close game. But give Auburn credit. I mean, their defense kept them in there. But A&M outgained them for nearly 300 yards, had a touchdown called back. Of course, Auburn's touchdown came after an interception deep in their own territory, brought back to the two-yard line. But Auburn offensively right now, they can't block up front on the pass protection. And then they're struggling to run the ball. The quarterback looks unsure. Jackson Arnold, you know, early in the year, we thought, well, they found their quarterback. I mean, you know, give A&M credit. I mean, they're undefeated. Probably if you're an A&M fan, you walked out of the thing, how in the world did Auburn have a chance to win that game? But Auburn offensively right now has got, they're in a bye, but I don't know how you can fix these issues with what their offensive line is dealing with, because they look terrible.
I don't. It's almost been 2 weeks in a row of a similar type scenario. The only thing I can figure, Gary, is it looks like they just could not put that Oklahoma game behind them. And I'm not sure what day of the week it happened, but there was something on social media with you talking to his team about it, what happened in the Oklahoma game with the official calls and all that. And he handled it exactly right with those players. But the problem is the administration and other folks kept talking about it all week long. You got to flush it. You got to move on. And I really think Oklahoma beat them twice. And the thing that tells me that they had more penalty yards, lost more yards in penalties than they gained in rushing. And that just kind of tells me that mentally they weren't focused and ready to play again. And frustration, you know, was not dealt with the right way. So, I mean, A&M's quarterback played very average, if not poor. And that's the only reason they were able to hang around and keep it close. So, you're exactly right. They got tremendous problems on offense. Defensively, they're good in pass rush. They're good when they protect the secondary with pass rush. But when another team can stay in balance and run and throw, they're not real dominant up front on defense either. So I don't know what the solution is, but I really think one of the biggest problems is they didn't have a good focused week of practice and get that Oklahoma thing behind them.
Well, they better figure it out quick because they got Georgia coming into Jordan-Hare next week from Saturday. Let's get to Tennessee and Mississippi State, boy, because I tell you what, Mississippi State, we knew they were better. This is another team that went out and brought in, I guess, 50 new players, you know, showing how you can flip your roster in 1 year. Give Tennessee credit again. I mean, this is a team that found a way to win. They scored two defensive touchdowns in the game, a pick six and a scoop and score. I thought Mississippi State outplayed them, but at the end of the day, Tennessee gets the win. It's a huge win for them. They didn't want to go down to 0-2 in the SEC. And for Mississippi State, it's a what might have been type of game as they lose it 41-34 in OT.
Yep, you pretty well summed it all up. Just watching them, you felt like Mississippi State was a better team the way they were playing. But at the end of the day, it's a couple of talent matchups. You know, Tennessee was able to make some big, huge, critical plays there towards the end. You look at Mississippi State right now, and they don't look like they did a year or two ago. They got a good-looking football team. They look like an SEC team. And I think he's done a great job in the offseason recruiting and also the portal. And they're going to beat some people this year. And if they're not in the middle of the top of the league, they're going to hurt some people's chances of winning the thing. But they've got a good football team. And they played Tennessee straight up good. And, you know, just a couple of things there toward the end of the game that they let slip away.
South Carolina, and maybe it just have been for 1 week, but in Kentucky's got some issues. But the Gamecocks found their offense, 28 points in the first half. And got a win over Kentucky, 35-13. What did you see from the Gamecocks? Did you see enough to believe that they can get this thing going?
I think it was a good win, a good bounce-back win for them, Gary, but Kentucky's not a good football team right now. South Carolina got two touchdowns out of the defense, and every game they've won this year, they either had scores on special teams or scores on defense. Their offense was still – it was good. It was okay. Sellers was solid. He wasn't anywhere close to what the hype was coming in the season. So I think it was a good win for them, but they're getting ready to hit Murderer's Row. And the competition's going to get a heck of a lot better. I mean, their next opponents will be right at LSU, at Baton Rouge, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Ole Miss at Oxford. Then they get a bye week and they go to College Station. So they just, I don't know that they won't be, they'll be the underdog, the decided underdog at every one of those games. And so it's a long way from returning to form or whatever, or getting back rolling. They just beat a bad football team with a young quarterback.
All right, Arkansas went outside the SEC, but anytime you host Notre Dame, it's big. And after heartbreaking, gut-wrenching losses to Ole Miss and Memphis, a lot of doubt surrounding the program, the future of the head coach, Sam Pittman, and they absolutely just got annihilated. You give up 42 in the first half. You get beat at home 56-13, and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. Pittman out. And to show you where we're at in college sports, the fact that Bobby Petrino, even on an interim basis, after the way he embarrassed that program, can be the head coach again at Arkansas, just goes to show you. But what do you make of Arkansas' situation? And, Sam Pittman seems to be universally liked by everybody in the coaching business and had some tough luck, it seemed like, at times. But, boy, when you come home in an environment like that and you get blown out, I guess that they felt like they had to make a change. Petrino, no doubt wants the job on a permanent basis. If he does well, he may get it. What's your feeling on the Arkansas situation?
It's just a mess, and I hate it. I don't know Sam Pittman, but I know anybody in this fashion who's ever been around him thinks he's a great person, a good football coach, and I wish it would have worked. I thought he was a great fit for the place. I don't know that Arkansas has got all their financial, I guess you'd say, advantages targeted on what they need to have it targeted on. And I even saw some comments by some the other day by the athletics director. You go out and hire a guy like Calipari, and you're kind of making a statement. We got to get this basketball thing going, and you better be giving him the money to keep these kids in the portal or get these kids out of the portal and keep these kids in your program. I don't see it happening in football. And they were overmatched on defense every game they played, and just don't have a good looking SEC football team athletically. And it's kind of sad today, but you got to start that first question ask you, we got enough money? And I know they've got money. They've got some money sources over there that some of these other schools don't even have. But for some reason, it doesn't seem like they've got it channeled in the right direction. We'll see what happens. He fired almost the whole defensive staff. I don't know who he's going to put in there to run it and get through the
season. I don't either. I don't either.
It's crazy. I don't know. These firings are happening early, I think, Gary, because of the portal. You have to have somebody in place by the time the last game's played, or you're going to lose opportunity to go after about 15 or 20 really great players to get five or six of them to turn your program around. So it's just college football really is. It's not in a good place right now.
Coach Ellis Johnson with us. Sorry, let's get to this weekend. As you said, a lot of buys, only five games. And we're not going to fool with Kent State and Oklahoma, but we got four SEC versus SEC matchups, and we'll begin with Alabama and Vanderbilt. Pavia told Chris Lowe that if Vanderbilt plays its game, it won't be close. Johnny Manziel is going to be here, supposedly on the sideline in a Pavia jersey. I mean, I get it. This young man, he got an extra year of eligibility. They say he may try to file to get another one next year. He's trying to maximize his earning. He's a heck of a football player. What Vanderbilt's done the last couple of years, some caller called earlier, they've got like 27% of their roster are graduate students. They're the oldest team in college football. Brought in Jerry Kill, brought in the offensive coordinator from Mexico State, and brought in Pavia. And it's changed the fortunes for Vanderbilt football and for Clark Lee. I mean, give them credit at what they've been able to do. It doesn't bother me what he's saying because he's got nothing to lose. If he wins, he's a legend. If they lose the game, people will move on. It is unusual when people play Alabama to have somebody talk this much, but he did it last year and backed it up. And they're a good football team. And as I said, they're you know, when you got a bunch of 23, 24, 25-year-old guys that have been around the block the way these guys have, Bobby is in his sixth year, they're not going to come in here and be afraid. I know that. What's Alabama got to do? It sounds funny saying, what does Alabama got to do to beat Vanderbilt? But I kind of think that's the case here. Game day's here. It's got all the national interest. You know, this is where we're at in college football. Alabama Vanderbilt is the biggest game of the weekend, and college game day's here. So, how do you see this matchup?
It's crazy, but I really think it's going to be a lot of hot air. I think Alabama's going to beat them double digits. And Vanderbilt is a good football team. They've beaten a 1AA team, Charleston Southern, Virginia Tech, who's I don't think has a winning record. South Carolina, who's not been anything close to what they were supposed to be coming in this year. Georgia State, and you know I don't think they have a winning record, but they're a group of five. And Utah State, which is a group of five. And I'm not sure what their record is, but that's their five wins. Now, I'm not saying they don't deserve anybody's 5-0. It's hard to win a college football game any day. But they haven't played anybody anywhere close to Alabama. And I think this ball game's totally up to Alabama if they lay an egg like they did last year. And that's why the game's attracting all this attention, because of what happened last year. But if Alabama plays well and plays up to their standard, it'll be double-digit win.
All right, let's get to Texas at Florida. Texas, you know, we still don't know much about them. Florida, we know, is in trouble, but this is one of those weird games where, you know, Florida's got a pretty good defense. Lagway seems to be healthier. You know, Texas is going into the swamp on Saturday afternoon. Can you see a scenario here where Florida could pull the upset?
Yes. You kind of led me into it. I've been looking at this a little bit, and I think it is prime for an upset. I'm almost ready to just kick it and say I think Florida might upset them. Both of them are coming off open dates, I think. I know Florida is, but
yeah, they are.
We don't have anything. Yeah, we don't have anything from last weekend to say how they playing. But I think that's been more helpful probably to Florida to get that open date than to Texas. And I just think they're going to upset them down the Gainesville.
Wow. Boy, that'd be a big one for Billy. He you know, he rallied last year, coach, and maybe he can do it again if they knock off Texas. That'd be a big step in the right direction. Interesting game out in College Station. The two maroon teams, Mississippi State and Texas A&M. You know, A&M has had a tendency in years past, just when you ready to jump on the bandwagon, they slip up. I don't know Mississippi State, though, mentally. That had to be a tough lost to bounce back from. So how do you see the Aggies and the Bulldogs playing out?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. It just depends on how well Mississippi State can get over this last game and still use this last game to keep it better, because I think they're playing at a level that they can play with Texas A&M. Also tough to have to go out there, I think, playing at Texas A&M, and that'll be more difficult for them, whereas last week they were at home. But I think it'll be a good football game, and I think, you know, probably Texas A&M wins another close one. But the biggest thing will be what you said: can they get over that loss and have a great week of preparation? Of course, it's all in haze in the barn by now. But if they've had a great week of preparation and ready to play again, I think it'll be a really good football game. But I just don't know they can beat Texas A&M out there in College Station.
And you've already said you don't think Kentucky's a very good team. And now they go into Athens, and you know, Georgia obviously is going to be looking to bounce back. You know, Kentucky's played them tough, even though Georgia always wins the game. It seems like Kentucky's, you know, has been able to play them tough. But I get a feeling you don't think that they're going to be able to hang in there this year.
I don't see it because of the young quarterback going into that environment and playing on the road in Athens. He's got experience, and he got banged around pretty good against South Carolina, because when they scored two defensive touchdowns, Kentucky had to abandon the running game pretty much, start trying to throw.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a sitting duck back there. And I see some similar things with Georgia. I don't see Kentucky being able to run the football on Georgia. And once that element's taken out of it, the pressure on the quarterback going to be huge. But as you said, Stoops usually plays Georgia and usually plays Lane, and Ole Miss usually plays those two games pretty dang well and surprises folks. So it could be a tighter game than we think, but I think this one can get lopsided real quick.
Lastly, I want to ask you about an ACC game because I think College Game Day was headed to Tallahassee until Florida State lost at Virginia, then Alabama won at Georgia, and so they switched their location. But Miami and Florida State on a Saturday night in Tallahassee.
I'm glad you brought that one up. It's for a dead week in the SEC. This game really is a very important game. I think Florida State may upset them. They've got them at home, and they didn't play well the other day. That game against Virginia, wasn't it a Friday or Thursday game?
Yeah, it was a Thursday night game. Or Friday night game.
Yeah,
it was a Friday night game, yeah.
Well, it just seems like they caught Virginia ready to play and got beat on the road at Virginia because they weren't ready to play. And I really think Miami's going to go down to Florida State. I'm picking this one for an upset, too.
All right. Great stuff as always, Coach. And so what's the agenda for you this weekend?
Well, I'll probably sit here and watch some ball games again, but it's going to be a little different. Last week, we watched a bunch of prize fights, and this week, we open dates everywhere. So, but I think there's some pretty good games. And then I look nationally, Gary, and other than the one you brought up, Miami, Florida State, there's not a whole lot of good matchups nationally in other conferences.
No, it's kind of an off weekend. But as you said, enough on the. Of course, I'll be in at Bryant Denny, Saving Field at Bryant Denny, and see if Bama can take care of Vanderbilt. Hey, thank you, Coach.
Enjoy it, Gary.
All right, appreciate you. All right, we're going to come back and wrap up hour number one of the Gary Harris Show. We'll do that right after this.
Home of Alabama sports. We are a championship school, and school is in session.
Makes the catch, makes them bang into each other, stays on his feet, breaks the tackle, scores, scores.
Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide take on Vanderbilt at Bryant Denny Stadium. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Alabama football. Presented by Pearl River Resort,
TCH Regional Medical Center,
Two Dimes Tuscaloosa,
and Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram.
On the Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Thursday edition of the Game, we're going to get you ready for Alabama at Vanderbilt. We'll do that with Josh from College Football Nerds. We're going to feature Rodney Orr, TiderInsider.com, and we'll have a chance to talk with our professional handicapper from Las Vegas, Bruce Marshall, all starting at 2 p.m. on the Game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports.
Chance to win tickets. Bring the entire family. Enjoy food, fun, and one of the largest art shows in the Southeast. For more info on the festival, go to kintop.org.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Available for after...
95.3 The Fair
and Sports Radio Tide 100.9
and 1230 AM WTBC.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny and warm today, Tuscaloosa's high 84. A little cooler tonight, clear with the low at 59. And for tomorrow and Saturday, a good supply of sunshine both days. The weather stays warm, highs between 82 and 85. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 75 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to the Gary Harris Show.
Goal line in, touchdown, Alabama!
On your home for Alabama sports, Tide 100.9, and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Texas brings us back into the Gary Harris Show, ZZ Top.
All right, we're wrapping it up for hour number one. Do want to remind you, though, that tomorrow is Friday. Is that the free? I'll be live at Industry Irish Pub beginning at 9 a.m. for the Gary Harris Show. Even though they don't open the doors until 11 a.m., I'll be there broadcasting, and we're going to have that Bama football trivia giveaway courtesy of T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. We got Robbie his print. We've still got to get Sherry her print, Gavin his print, and we'll be giving away something special again tomorrow from T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall, hoping the $99 suit sale. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the first hour, brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Hour number two, the Gary Harris Show is on the way. Keep it dialed in at Tide 100.9 FM at 1230 AM, WTBC.
It's time to win some cash on Tide 100.9 and 1230 WTBC. W265CG Tuscaloosa. Here's this hour's cash code.
The code is 573. That's 573. That code again is 573.
You. He's on meds, too. Call 800-777-1225, 800-777-1225, or biglou.com.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV, Crimson Tide Kickoff, play-by-play for Alabama sports, and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports, Tide 100.9, and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of the Gary Harris Show here on Tide 100.9 FM, 1230 AM, WTBC, your home for Alabama sports. It is Thursday, October the 2nd, 2025, and we're going to get to some phone calls in the next segment. Mary there in the ATL, we'll get to you. But right now, we're going to kick off this segment with Will Miller from Bama Central and also one of our go-to Braves people that we talk about when we want to talk about the Atlanta Braves. And certainly huge news yesterday, Brian Snitker will not return as manager of the Braves. He'll be in his 50th year in the organization. He joined the Braves organization in 1976. He'll be in a senior advisory role. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good morning, Gary. I'm really good. How about you?
Good to have you. Yeah, I'm well. I want to do a deep dive into this Brian Snitker deal because I think you and I talked during the season and we felt like this was going to be it. I mean, it was kind of pre-planned when he signed the extension that 2025 would be his last season. But now after reading some Mark Bowman stuff and some other writers, it appears to me, and you correct me if you think I'm wrong, I think Snitker, as the season went on, decided I feel like he wanted to come back for another year, particularly the way this season went off the rails, in that the organization had already decided to move on. He is going to stay, like I said, with the Braves. He'll get those 50 years as a senior advisor. But am I on to something here? Do you think that Snitker actually wanted to come back and sign a new contract with Atlanta to manage, or was this his decision?
Maybe at the first of the year he didn't, but I definitely believe that as the team started to heat up after it didn't matter and they started having fun again, maybe that creeps into his mind, because it's hard to leave the game when it's been your whole life. I mean, I made this comment to one of my friends earlier this week in an unrelated baseball headline when Garrett Cooper retired. I said, you know, it's difficult when you've been around it for such a long time. It's all you know. It's all you do, that it's finally time to walk away, and that's hard. And I imagine that as the season's end drew closer for Brian Snitker, he had that same internal dialogue, knowing I've been in the organization for half a century and I've been managing for a decade. He did say at his press conference yesterday he never thought he'd manage a day in the big leagues, let alone 10 years, but it absolutely flew by, and his number was up, and I don't know if you're ever truly ready. So I definitely think that Brian Snitker did want to stay at least one more year and turn things around, especially with the way the team played down the stretch and the signs, really, that were shown that this would have been a completely different baseball club this year if certain things had flipped the other way, certain coins had landed on the other side. And for a guy like that, that's, like I said, been around the game, it's tough to not be able to scratch that itch.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you summed that up well.
but he won't be back. On paper, this club has a chance to be really good in 2026. Let's talk about possible replacements. I look at the Braves. Of course, you look at the current coaching staff, and I would think Walt Weiss would be the only potential internal hire there. Some other names that have been mentioned, of course, David Ross, Mark DeRosa is an interesting name that has popped up with Braves ties, obviously. I think there'll be a fan push for Chipper Jones. And what's wild is I get the feeling that I don't think that's where the Braves will go. He's never coached or managed, but I think Chipper would probably take it. Skip Schumacher's name has come up. Of course, Ron Washington just got let go by the Angels. I could see him somehow being on the staff. I don't think the Braves are going to hire him as a manager. Where do you think Atlanta goes for a replacement?
Out of the realistic options, Schumacher or DeRosa are probably your best bets. DeRosa I worry about because he does not have extensive managerial experience. It's only the World Baseball Classic for the one time. And granted, it was the best field in the history of the tournament that he had to deal with, some of the best teams that have ever been put together that he had to deal with. But he also had the best team ever been put together outside of Japan. So, I mean, he's slated to manage again this coming year, which he obviously wouldn't be able to do if the Braves hired him. He'd have to manage spring training.
Mm-hmm.
But the lack of experience, if you're prioritizing managerial experience in the Braves front office, which I don't make any claims to know what that list is and how high up that is. I'm not Alex Anthopoulos. I'd like to think there's some things I would do differently, as you know. But he's not a bad option. I think he's got a great mind, great eye for the game. You know, obviously he's done television. He's done a great job. He's a great analyst. I could listen to him talk about baseball all day long. But it's a little bit different when you're in the dugout and it's between the lines and what you say and do actually matters. And for a guy that's never done it, and especially for the inflection point that this organization is in with the core that it has still being together, you have to get back to winning next year, just period. You have to do better. Is he the guy? I don't know. Skip Schumacher, he did a fantastic job with the Marlins. It was really out of his control what happened there and the change of direction from an executive standpoint there that really isn't a reflection at all on his ability as a manager. I think their current manager, by the way, is outstanding, should win the National League Manager of the Year award, in my opinion, Clayton McCullough. Schumacher and DeRosa, I would imagine if they gave Chipper Jones like a Craig Counsell-esque contract, $8 million a year, he would take it. But they're not giving him, obviously, that kind of money, especially for a guy that has never managed before. I was telling this to my dad yesterday. There's just not a lot of candidates that really make you jump out of your shoes. And part of it is just going to be the timing of it. Every year the cycle is going to look different names out there. But internally, Walt Weiss, I'm not seeing a lot of fan anticipation, I guess, for Walt Weiss to be the manager. I don't know how many people in the fan base, if any, just vehemently want Walt Weiss to be the manager. Ron Washington has some health issues. I'd love to have him back as third base coach. I've said that several times over the last week. If he wants a one-year contract to come back and be the third base coach, by all means, yes, please. Let's get Austin Riley back right. Let's get Ozzie Albies back right, especially coming off another wrist injury. Let's hone in on that shortstop position, whether or not Ha-Seong Kim takes that player option, which I really think our team needs them to do. Let's do that, but I don't think he'll be the manager. Freddie Gonzalez, I imagine, gets an interview simply because of the favor that he did the organization by coming back to be the third base coach, but it would be tough to imagine him getting the actual call, and I would actually be very disappointed if this all bubbles over and he turns out to be the manager, because I really don't think he or David Ross is particularly remarkable in terms of managing ability. I like both guys. I just don't think they're cut from the manager's cloth. So right now, I think, again, of the realistic options, if I had to pick one right now, Schumacher's probably the best non-sitting manager that mm-hmm. you could go get. I would do a backflip if they stole Stephen Bolt from Cleveland, but I don't think that's realistic.
Timetable-wise, do you think this is something that, players, people in the organization, staffers, they like to know who's in charge. So how quickly or how long, I guess is a better way to ask it, before you think the Braves make an announcement?
It really could be. It'll be this month, no doubt. No doubt it'll be this month. You generally see these things wrap completely up within days of the World Series being over, because obviously at that point, if somebody's going to hire a sitting manager or a sitting bench coach, those guys are all done with their season that they're currently in right now with the postseason going on. And it seems like, you know, every year there's some bench coach somewhere that's considering or being considered to get a look for his first managerial job. They're pretty hit or miss. Don't know that the White Sox could have done much worse with Pedro Grifol, even though he didn't have anything to work with. Matt Quatraro has done a fine job over there in Kansas City with obviously not a ton of resources. I don't feel like those kind of names have been thrown around for the Braves, because you look at like the non-sitting managers headlining the conversation. It's either Schumacher, who's managed before, David Ross, who's managed before, or Mark DeRosa, who has coached but is obviously currently doing his TV gigs. So I don't know. I think they would have preferred to look in the organization, no doubt about that. And I think you probably agree with me there, Gary. They'd love to have had a slam dunk choice in the organization. And Walt Weiss also has that managerial experience from Colorado, with them being one of the most irrelevant franchises in the sport. I imagine some people have forgotten about that. He's there, but I look at him more as an if all else fails than a surefire number one leading candidate as of right now. But I think they'll want to have it done in the next couple of weeks, you know, 3 weeks maximum, just to know who it's going to be able to go forward. Because like I said, next year is an important year.
Will Miller with us from Bama Central talking Braves. All right, roster-wise, team-wise, of course you want to get healthy. What do you think Atlanta does in the offseason? Do you think they try to retweak some, or just basically try to bring back this team intact and, you know, limit – they haven't been huge free agent buyers in recent years. Where do you think they go with this roster?
I'd love to see them do exactly what they didn't do last winter that affected their team in a huge way this year, and that's shore up the bullpen. They needed to do it last year. They didn't for whatever reason. And from day one this year, you saw how the patchwork bullpen was going to have an adverse impact on this team. Obviously, for the second year in a row, they were severely not healthy. And I don't think you expected as many injury disasters as you had in 2024, but lo and behold, that's exactly what happened, because your entire opening day starting rotation was on the injured list at the same time at one point. And there's really not a whole lot you can do with that, regardless of who's on your team. By some incredible stroke of misfortune, that level of luck happens to you 2 years in a row. And at least last year, they were fortunate enough to sneak into the playoffs by the skin of their teeth, even though everybody knew they weren't going to do anything once they got there. The achievement was getting there. You do have the reinforcements coming in. Joe Jimenez coming back from injury. He was supposed to come pitch later this year, and I think he's really good and will be really good next year if they do elect to keep him. There's some arbitration decisions down the line. I've been following a guy on Twitter, Ken Anderson, who's done a great job breaking some of those down in the bullpen. Guys like Dylan Dodd, Daisbell Hernandez, who a lot of people thought would take that next step this year and didn't. Pierce Johnson is under contract. He's done really, really good work since he came to the Braves. Tyler Kinley did a good job this year. Dylan Lee, you got to hope, finds it. He was unpitchable after like the month of June.
Right.
You got to hope next year. There are options. And then from a starting standpoint, I think this team's top priority in free agency should be a starting pitcher. Whether it's I can't imagine it's front line, because front line money is just not money that the Braves are going to spend in free agency on any player, as you alluded to. But you'll get a midline starting pitcher for $15 to $20 million, because you have Chris Sale on a cheap club option, easiest option to pick up probably in the history of the game, $18 million for the work he's done. Absolutely. But they have to have somebody else added, reinforcements, so that if, God forbid, you end up having to retool your rotation like you have this year. I mean, Joey Wentz was starting games for this team, and for the record, I hope he gets non-tendered. If I don't see him get non-tendered, I'm going to be exceptionally unhappy. but it was patchwork, like I alluded to with the bullpen as well. And again, there's only so much you could do, but the pitching should be the priority. I would expect, I don't know, Marcell Ozuna could sign on a cheaper deal. I would imagine maybe they'll talk about it. I don't know if I surely expect him to be back next year, and he's obviously been around for a while. I mean, him and, you know, Travis d'Arnaud came in together. That's another guy who people have floated around maybe for a managerial possibility if he doesn't want to keep playing anymore, which he very well might not, because he didn't have a good year with the Angels. If that is the case, you could be looking for a new DH, because you're going to want Drake Baldwin to catch more often inevitably. But you could also, if Marcell Ozuna does walk and Sean Murphy gets back healthy, you could have a Sean Murphy catching and Drake Baldwin being the DH and vice versa. So there are internal options there. If Marcell Ozuna leaves and you don't bring him back on a cheaper deal, but position player wise, I mean, the team, if Kim picks up that player option, your team really could look the same and you feel good about it. Ronald back healthy for a full year. You know, Michael Harris, you hope he can carry over the things that he did in July and August into next year for a full year. Profar, if they had him the whole year, I mean, he had like an 830 OPS or an 800 and something OPS, they would have been a different team if he played all year. So you feel good about the pieces that you have, if they're healthy and if they're working on the things that they need to work on from this past year. I do think that this has every bit the potential to be a really good baseball team next year.
Well, I know Braves fans hope that it is, because it was a tough one for Braves country in 2025, so a bounce back would be nice. Final thought on Snitker, 10 years, six division titles. Hey, listen, if you win a World Series as a manager of the Atlanta Braves, you know, you're special. I mean, I know you and I feel like Bobby Cox should have won several. And I think the Braves had teams that were good enough to win more, but he did get one. I never thought he was a great tactician, but I do think he was a great clubhouse guy. People enjoyed playing for him, a lot like Bobby Cox. I mean, there were a lot of internal issues with this club. Based on that, how do you feel he goes down in Braves history, maybe as the second greatest manager of the Atlanta Braves behind Cox?
100%. He's an absolute franchise legend, and I have absolutely raved about what I feel are, like you said the word, Gary, their tactician. I've raved about his tactical shortcomings, which I deem a far-reaching, multi-year spanning problem. But he was such a great presence for this franchise, outstanding person, it seems, but a great presence for these. I mean, these guys love Brian Snitker, the guys that have even gone off and played somewhere else. They love Brian Snitker. He was a guy that did something that the franchise really needed. Freddie gets fired. You know, they were hoping to just suffer through that year and then dump him and do a proper search around this time of year. It didn't happen. The team was even worse than they thought. Brian Snitker comes in, takes over for the rest of the season, and who could have guessed what that would have turned into? I mean, it has been so special, some of the runs these teams have gone on. In some ways, it's looked like the 90s in bad ways, but in some ways, it's looked like the 90s in all of the great ways. And there's been no greater moment, I feel, to be a Braves fan. I wasn't alive in 1995, but there's been no greater moment, I feel, as a Braves fan than to watch the 2021 team overcome all of that adversity and hoist that trophy. And it doesn't happen without Brian Snitker. Alex Anthopoulos said it doesn't happen without Brian Snitker. He absolutely deserves the recognition of going into the Braves Hall of Fame next year and being able to get that 50th year with the franchise and get his flowers. And that's another thing I brought up, is that if he'd come back next year and this same saga had repeated itself, you start talking about tarnishing your legacy. And a guy like that, everything that he's done at so many levels of this franchise, he just doesn't deserve that. He deserves to go out in a way that he's going to be celebrated and appreciated for all of the good things that he did, and there was a heck of a lot of them.
All right, Will, great stuff. I wanted to tap into Bama Vandy a little bit, but I've done that with so many different people. This Braves discussion was needed, and I need to hit the break. But you can give me a quick score prediction if you got one for Vandy and Alabama.
Sure. Let's go with 38-28, Alabama. Sounds off the cuff.
Sounds good to me. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Gary. Have a good one.
All right, 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we'll be back and take some phone calls. 205-342-9904. Jess Spiegel coming up at the bottom of the hour. Gary Harris Show rolls on from Tuscaloosa on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTVC, your home for Alabama sports.
West Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Here are the TuscaloosaThread.com headlines brought to you by Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. It is day four of the federal government shutdown, and Alabama junior Republican U.S. Senator Katie Britt says the Senate came within five votes of a short-term spending plan, but she's optimistic that more votes could be picked up.
We need a few more to come on board and do what's right.
Britt is turning down her salary until the shutdown ends. Newly elected and returning municipal leaders from across
across Alabama are wrapping up 2 days of orientation to their jobs training in Tuscaloosa at the Bryant Conference Center today. And the Tuscaloosa Target store will be one of six in Alabama, opening at midnight until 1 a.m. for the release of Taylor Swift's new album, The Life of a Showgirl. Fall is here, so let Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram put you in a new Ram truck, Dodge Charger, or a Jeep. Shop the dealership where former Bama
lineup offering fuel efficiency, advanced technology, and plush comfort. Tuscaloosa Mazda, 3100 Skyland Boulevard East, or online at TuscaloosaMazda.com.
Los Tarascos has been serving Mexican favorites like burritos, fajitas, and quesadillas since 1999. Their new location is at 4100 Owen Parkway in Northport. And of course, you can find Los Tarascos in Tuscaloosa at 110 Skyland Boulevard. The bar areas feature big screen television so you can enjoy your favorite sporting events. Los Tarascos features daily happy
gutter inspection today and get up to 30% off. That's leaffilter.com/country for up to 30% off. leaffilter.com/country. See representative for warranty details.
Alabama fans are all over the world, and we are too. Download the Tide 100.9 app right now in the App Store and Google Play, and take the Crimson Tide everywhere you go.
All right, 10:25. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. We need to get some phone calls, and we got a couple that we're going to get to here before we get to Jeff Spiegel in the next segment. Let's talk to Mary in the ATL, who's been patiently holding. Hey, Mary.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Good morning.
Good. I'm a little bit agitated this morning. Diego Pavia, I think, is theoretically speaking, if you will, writing a check that he can't cash. And I think he needs not to get his cart before the horse. So I think he needs to start watching what he says. Because I'm about ready to put on a pair of pads and go after him myself.
I hear you.
I think I could do it. And it's just, don't get ahead of yourself, which I feel like we're doing the same thing. We're not getting ahead of ourselves. We're not getting overconfident. We're not being too cocky. Yeah, we beat Georgia. That's what we do. We win. And I feel like he's trying to get a little bit too ahead of himself. So I think he needs to start watching what he says. So, and not write a check that he can't cash.
Well, hopefully he can't cash it. Hopefully he won't cash it. That's the whole key. Yeah, because if he does, if they come in here and win, you know what? He's going to be a legend for Vanderbilt for the rest of his life. So it's up to Alabama to nip it in the bud and make him look foolish. And it's a big game, and Alabama needs to play well. As I said earlier, this is a team that's, like half their roster is either seniors or graduate students. I mean, they're an old, mature football team, and it's up to Alabama to answer the bell. I'm like you. I think they will.
Well, I've got about a year or two on Pavia. I'm about a year or two older. He shouldn't be playing college football right now. I don't think he should have gotten the year of eligibility. I don't think he should be playing. I don't think it's fair, but my opinion, it works sucks to them, so it doesn't really matter. But I don't think he's ready for what we can bring to the field. I mean, yeah, I know we've got injuries, we've got people out, but I don't see that stopping us like being a hindrance to us. I think we can definitely deliver a punch, and I think it's going to be a big one.
Well, I hope you're right, Mary. That's what Bama fans are waiting on. They're waiting on a knockout punch to take care of Vanderbilt. Are you you coming in for the game, or are you going to have to watch this one in Atlanta?
I will be working Saturday.
Okay.
I will be back. I will be in town in Tuscaloosa on the 14th.
Okay.
So maybe I could come by and see y'all if that's okay.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah, we'll set that up.
I'll be in town on the 14th. I won't be back for a game until homecoming weekend.
Okay.
That'll be my next game.
Okay, well that'll be good. Yeah, yep. look forward to seeing you again. Well, try to make sure if you're working that you record the game so you can go back and watch it.
I'll be off and plenty of time before kickoff.
Oh, good, great. All right, thank you, Mary.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Roll Tide.
All right, let's get back to Tom. Hey, Tom.
Hey, what's up this morning again? Thanks for letting me call in again. But the Braves conversation has really interested me. And I'm going to say something that you're familiar with this comment coming from me. And that's the Braves need to pursue the hitting coach for the Phillies. The Phillies have hit their way into the playoffs the last 4 years. And I think that a lot of it is because of the coaching of the hitting coach. When A-Rod and Jeter and Big Poppy are on the playoff discussion table, and they say, all three of them unanimously say, that the guy with the Phillies is the greatest hitting coach in the history of baseball. Go hire that guy. Quit pussyfooting around. Go get him. Everybody likes to see home runs, and the Phillies are hitting the ball as good as anybody in baseball the last 3 years. Go get the guy. It's a no-brainer, you fool.
Well, you're talking about Kevin Long, and he is, he's been around. He's been around as a hitting coach for a number of different organizations. And you're right, the Phillies, they mash it. So
they produce. The Braves, they want to get people on base and swing for the fences and do stupid stuff. And I'm glad that manager's gone. I don't care what anybody says. I'm sick of that crap that they do over there. No strategy, no trying to move players. No, well, actually, bottom line, not trying to win. Mm-hmm. And I'm fed up with that. And get somebody in there that's got a mind for offense and go in that direction for a while. Quit going after these damn smoky mirror strategies that don't ever work.
All right, Tom. Appreciate
whatever.
It.
Whatever. Nobody agrees with nothing I say.
No, I didn't disagree with you at all. I'm letting you air out your points. I think it was time for Snicker to go too.
I was being emphatic to get you fired up, so you jump in there and say, "Yeah, we need to hit the ball better than we did."
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. At the same time, I think that, you know, being a hitting coach is a whole lot different than being a manager. So that's my. I'm not saying that he couldn't do it, but you know, you're a hitting coach. You're focused on one thing, and that's working with those hitters. You're not really focused on the strategy of the game. So, I mean, to be a manager encompasses a lot more than being able to get guys to hit the baseball. And I know that you know, he's never
that's
been a manager.
Great.
So
that's a great point.
Yeah, that's
he's been so good. He's been so good at what he does is what I'm going by.
Yeah, no, he has been, and he's been doing it for a long time. I think he was the hitting coach of the Yankees like 20 years ago, and he's got a good track record. So, but I'll be watching closely. We all will to see where the Braves go. It's a big hire. So, hey, got to hit the break, Tom. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Thank you, man.
Yeah, 10:31. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with Jeff Spiegel, sports checker at ABC 3340. Talk some college football next year on the Gary Harris Show.
Or call 800-550-9219. That's 800-550-9219. Tax Relief Advocates. Real solutions for real people.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past, that has not been the case, and this I like knowing that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on advertise with us on our website.
Tide 100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny and warm today. Tuscaloosa's high 84. A little cooler tonight. Clear with the low at 59. And for tomorrow and Saturday, a good supply of sunshine both days. The weather stays warm. Highs between 82 and 85. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 77 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:30.
6:36, it's time for Jeff Spiegel, sports anchor at ABC 3340. Talk some college football and high school football here on the Gary Harris Show. How's it going, Jeff?
Great, Gary. How are you?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Well, we've all read the quote that Diego Pavia had for Chris Lowe. I know we've got to bring it, that's for sure. The crowd, I think, is going to be a big factor in the game. But we just got to play within the white lines. If we do that, if we play our game, it won't be close. So let's get this straight. They went 40 years without beating Alabama at all. They beat them last year in Nashville, which was, you know, a monumental victory for them. And now he says if Vanderbilt plays its game, it won't even be close. What do you make of Diego Pavia? Obvious comments.
That's Diego Pavia, man. And I mean, look, whether you love him or you hate him, I mean, that's who he is. And that's who he's going to be. I mean, he's going to bring it. He's going to bring it on Saturday. And he's going to bring it, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you know, as well. You know, with quotes and with energy and all that. And look, if I'm Vanderbilt and I'm a Vanderbilt fan, that's who I want as my quarterback. I want my guy to be that confident and come in and be ready to, you know, take Alabama to the cleaners on Saturday. I want him to have that attitude. Now, you know, you could say it may come back to bite him, and it may, you know, and quite honestly, I mean, I really think Alabama's going to tattoo him. But that's how I want my guy to carry himself going into a big game like this. I would rather him be that way than, you know, just give the old same standard, you know, it's all about us, we'll do what we do, and they're a great team and all that stuff. I mean, he's good for us. He gives us good copy, as they say.
Yeah, there's no doubt he does. And listen, too, Jeff, I think to some degree it's a no-lose situation for him. If Vanderbilt wins the game, he's more of a legend than he already is. He's a legend forever in Vanderbilt lore. And if he loses the game, you know, there'll be a little bit of, you know, that's what you get type of thing. But people will move on. It is still Vanderbilt, regardless of what they've accomplished. And they've accomplished a lot. I do want to ask you about their team, though, because one thing that is obvious, you know, half their roster are either seniors or graduates. Students. I mean, the portal and NIL was the best thing that ever happened to Vanderbilt and for Clark Lee to get out of his comfort zone, because he's admitted he was going to try to build this program in a traditional model, and they were going nowhere fast. But then he brings in Jerry Kill. He brings in Diego Pavia. He brings in the offensive coordinator from New Mexico State. He goes out and signs a ton of players in the portal. They've got an average age of whatever, 23, 24 years old on their roster. I mean, one thing's for sure. I mean, they won't be intimidated. These guys have played a lot of football. Pavia is in his sixth year. They'll come in here expecting to win. For them to have success, you know, winning in Nashville is one thing when you catch Alabama a little bit off guard, but as you said, Alabama's going to be ready. Does Vanderbilt have to have the same model that they had last year? Get out in front, possess the ball. I mean, they held it for 40-something minutes last year. What's the key for Vanderbilt to pull the upset in your mind?
Well, both those things. I mean, you have to get out to a good start when you're playing on the road, and you have to be able to hold the ball, and you got to do like Nick Saban used to say, you know, make those fans sit on their hands, you know, and don't give them anything to cheer about, you know, and that's what they've got to do. And, you know, one thing that I would say, you know, if Alabama fans are kind of upset, you know, about what he said and all that, I'll point back to Media Days. We played a soundbite from Media Days where he said he wanted this team at Vanderbilt this year to be more like the 2020 Alabama team that just kicked butt and took names with everybody they played on their schedule. I mean, they just, you know, put the pedal to the metal and just, in his words, took off from people. Mm-hmm. I mean, never gave them a chance to be in a ball game. So in that way, you know, he paid homage to the Alabama program and to that 2020 team by doing that. But yeah, that's what they've got to do. And look, I mean, all this talk is great, but I will remind Vanderbilt, they haven't played anybody yet. The only team they played with a pulse, you know, is South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I mean, they opened what, with Charleston Southern? They beat Georgia State. Utah State. Yeah. You know, they're about to play Alabama, LSU, Missouri, and Texas. They're getting into the meat of their schedule. So this is where, you know, they'll prove themselves for sure.
Jeff Spiegel with us from ABC 3340. Backtracking a little bit, and you and I talked about this last week, man, results matter. And, you know, Georgia could have won that game. I mean, you know, if the kid doesn't get tripped up by Overton on the fourth down play, or if maybe if Kirby kicks the field goal and they win it in overtime, whatever, the conversations this week would have been completely different. I mean, it would have been, you know what it would have been. You know, DeBoer can't cut it and 2-2. And the reality is it would have been rough. But they won that game. And I say all that to ask you this question, just how big, I mean, long term, they've still got to finish the season. I get that. But in the short term, how big was that win for Kalen DeBoer?
Well, it was big because, you know, he hadn't really proven himself on the road. You know, he needed to win a big road game. You know, good at home, terrible on the road. And so, you know, he had to change the narrative, you know, that this was a team who could, you know, who could travel, who didn't, like, you know, turn into, it couldn't be a hare at home and then a tortoise on the road, you know. So it was good. It was big. And there were some things, you know, that I'm sure Kirby would like to have back. I'm sure he would have probably chose to kick that field goal. To me, I didn't have a problem with the play call because I had a problem with who they gave the ball to. You know, I would have been, if I'm a Georgia fan, I'm going, why didn't you give it to Owen? Why didn't you give it to McCray? You know, instead of somebody that LT Overton, you know, could knock over, you know, and knock off balance like that. Somebody a little more sturdy, because there was a lot of green grass in front of that guy.
Sure,
now, here's the thing. If they convert the fourth down, they're still not in the end zone. So you're not guaranteed points all because you make the fourth and one. So I would have kicked the field goal, gotten the points, because it was obvious the way the game was going in the second half that points were going to be at a premium. So you know what? If you're Kalen DeBoer and you're the Tide, you take advantage of a screw up that the other coach made, and then you stay in front, and, you know, you convert third downs like they did a beautiful job of all night. And I thought Ty Simpson, I mean, really showed out. I thought his confidence in the pocket, you know, was just fantastic. And I thought he played a great game.
All right. You've already said you like Bama to win it over Vanderbilt and kind of shut Diego Pavia up. What do you make of all this Johnny Manziel stuff? I mean, my Lord. I mean, I guess Vanderbilt's going to give him a sideline pass. He's going to be wearing a Diego Pavia jersey. They say he's going to be at a local night spot here on Friday night. And, you know, I mean, the guy just won't go away. And I guess it makes sense that he and Pavia, similar type personalities, have kind of formed this kinship with a mutual hate for the University of Alabama.
Yeah. Well, was it Diego said that he – saw like Manziel's win over Alabama like 100 times or something like that, or
yeah, that. Just watched it over and over.
There's definitely, you know, hero worship on both sides, but I think it adds some spice to the game. I really do. And you know what, it should add some fuel to Alabama's fire as well, you know, because look, Manziel, yeah, I mean, beat him in Tuscaloosa, but you know, Alabama beat him, you know, in College Station. Right. So I think it adds some fuel to the fire. I think it intensifies Alabama even more. I think this team is already playing with an edge. This team is already going to be incredibly ticked off, you know, by the time the game starts with all of this stuff going on. You know, the gall, you know, that Vanderbilt can get under Alabama's skin, that Vanderbilt can get under Alabama's skin. I mean, so that there's going to be a mission to kind of put these guys in their place.
All right, let's move on and let's get to Auburn, even though they're on bye. And I do give them credit for hanging in that A&M game. You know, I watched a lot of that game, and I, you know, if you just, and the stats bear it out. I mean, they were out game by nearly 300 yards. He felt like A&M probably should have won that game by 20 plus points, but it was only 16-10, and Auburn had a chance, despite the fact that their offense is absolutely abysmal. I mean, they can't block up front in pass protection. Now, all of a sudden, they're not running the ball as effectively. And the quarterback, you know, Peyton Thorne got so much grief, but Jackson Arnold, you know, is holding the ball, not seeing the field, shell-shocked, whatever you want to call it. It begs the question, is Hugh Freeze, I mean, he had that couple years at Ole Miss where he beat Nick Saban, and he's parlayed that into this persona that he's some type of special coach. And really, his record outside of a couple years at Ole Miss doesn't bear it out, and even with quarterbacks. I'm beginning to wonder if he can evaluate quarterbacks, number one, and number two, can he develop quarterbacks? I mean, they got a bye week to try to fix it before Georgia, but that offensive performance against A&M was abysmal.
Well, it was terrible. Only 1 yard of total offense. 0-for-13 in third down conversions. And look, I know these stats really well. And Gary, here's how I know all these stats, and I've committed them to memory. The church I go to, there's a 90-year-old Auburn fan who sits on the second pew from the front of the church auditorium. And I was talking to him Sunday, and he goes, I'm 90 years old. And I'm never going to see another winning season at Auburn in my lifetime. It was so sad. Mm. And he was rattling off all these stats and everything. And it is. I mean, it's a sad situation. And look, yeah, they hung in there with Texas, but they would have been stuck on 3 points had Atkins not returned
That's right.
6, 7, 2 yards down to the two. I mean, so Auburn had a 2 yard touchdown drive. Big deal. You know, I mean, their offense is just—it's ridiculously awful, and yeah, their offensive line—they've got major issues. And the only reason they've hung in there with these two teams is because of their defense. But now, eventually, now here's what's going to happen. I mean, if they get blown out by Georgia, you know, pretty soon the defense is not going to have the buy-in, and then you've got total non-buy-in from the team. So. You know, this game against Georgia, obviously, it's huger than huge. You know, it's a night game at Jordan-Hare, which used to be a really intimidating, you know, atmosphere. I don't know how intimidating it will be that Saturday night. I think the Auburn fans will bring it. But this is one of those situations where, you know, they've got to be competitive in that football game. Someone asked me the other day, you know, well, what's got to happen? What is the scenario that will happen for Hugh Freeze to lose his job in the middle of the year, a la Sam Pittman, a la UCLA, Virginia Tech, and those situations like that. And I could see a situation where, you know, if they go into this Georgia game and they lose something like 34-7, I mean, it might be a big news day at Auburn come Monday or Tuesday.
Wow. Yep, it sure could be. All right, we're getting short on time, but just real quickly, I want to ask you about Texas and Florida, both coming off byes. Billy Napier kind of turned it around last year. You know, do you have Texas on upset alert here in the swamp at all?
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, I think people have been waiting for Arch Manning to really come through and have like a big game. Well, here's an SEC game, you know, that you know he can kind of get off to a good start here, and I think I don't see Florida turning this around at all.
And the Arkansas situation, you know, gut-wrenching losses to Ole Miss and Memphis, and then just got absolutely annihilated at home by Notre Dame. Pittman is out, and I get it. At the same time, though, it just gets, you know, there's no shame in college athletics. The fact that Bobby Petrino, after the way he embarrassed that university and lied, is back even as the interim head coach, and there are a lot of people in Arkansas wanting him to be the permanent head coach. What does that say about, I guess, college sports, man? It's just it's amazing to me.
It really is. I don't know. I don't know. I can't get over that. It's just kind of crazy. Now, I have no doubt that he's just going to be the interim coach. I've heard a lot of rumblings about maybe Rhett Lashley, going after Rhett Lashley, which would be an incredible hire, you know, for Arkansas. So I think their answers go outside of Bobby Petrino. I'm not sure how many people are in favor of Petrino being the permanent head coach. Maybe it's the majority. I don't know. But I think they'll look outside Bobby Petrino to get to. Of course, now if he lights it up in the second half, you know, it may be a different story, but I don't see them doing that.
Yeah, and Travis, I don't know, he's going to hire to coach the defense. They hired Travis Williams and the defense coordinator and half the defensive staff, or most of the defensive staff, so it'll be interesting. All right, real quickly, UAB off a bye. They get Army at home. Early kick, 11 a.m. They're 2-2. You know, Do you think they have a shot to win this game? And if they do, they'd be over 500. So could show some progress. What do you see from the Blazers and the Cadets in this one?
But Monday, Dilfer kind of laid the law down. He said, look, you know, the people got to take some pride in what they do. If I see the body language where people are not interested in turning this thing around, you know, those guys aren't going to play. And he said, these guys who aren't going to play, maybe guys who you've seen play the first 4 weeks. So he's kind of, you know, doing some house cleaning here, you know, in midseason to kind of get this thing back on the right track. Don't know if it's going to work Saturday, but, you know, playing at home. Look, the city spent $200,000 on football tickets to try to boost attendance, you know, for the football program. So so there's that. So we'll see if they pack protective and get behind this team.
Yeah, be a big win for Trent Dilfer, no doubt about that. All right, Jeff, obviously big game tomorrow night, high school football, Hewitt Trussville at Thompson coming off the loss. They can't do anything with Clay Chalkwell. It's a good thing they're in 7A, I guess, if you're Thompson. But Corey called in, wanted me to get your thoughts on it. Is this the year that Hewitt Trussville is able to best Thompson?
Well, I really like Hewitt Trussville's team. I really do. I think Josh is doing a good job there. His son is playing great quarterback for them. They got a lot of good skill guys. But I still think Thompson has got a lot of weapons on offense and defensively. I think they would have won that game against Clay Chalkwell had they not gotten off to a horrendous start in the second half, giving up the fumble and the scoop and score and all that. So I think Thompson is going to come back and have a strong performance in this one. And I look for the Warriors to beat the Huskies.
All right. Appreciate it, Jeff. And tell everybody about ELG Wrap and anything else you want to pass along in regards to your great sportscasting that you do at 3340.
I appreciate you, man. Yeah, we'll have the EOG Wrap after the Miami-Florida State game, which is our primetime game on Saturday night. Looking forward to that. Hope you have a great weekend, Gary, and be safe out there.
Thanks, Jeff. All right, 10:53. We'll take a final timeout, and we'll come back and wrap it up and get you ready for the Miller's Edge coming up at 11 a.m. The Gary Harris Show continues right after this.
On the Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Thursday edition of The Game, we're going to get you ready for Alabama at Vanderbilt. We'll do that with Josh from College Football Nerds. We're going to feature Rodney Orr, TiderInsider.com, and we'll have a chance to talk with our professional handicapper from Las Vegas, Bruce Marshall, all starting at 2 p.m. on The Game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa. The Game with Ryan Fowler. Weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
The Tide Tailgate Show is presented by Pearl River Resort in Choctaw, Mississippi. Online at pearlriverresort.com. And by Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Online at TuscaloosaCDJR.com. And by Two Dimes. Online at TwoDimes.club. And by Druid City Regional Medical Center. DCHSystem.com.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the lucky
800-989-4040. Or go to selectquote.com to get your free quote today. That's 1-800-989-4040. Details on example rate at selectquote.com.
The best station in the state, breaking down Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:57, got an app message in from Mel JSM in Moundville. Diego and Johnny better watch running their mouth in Tuscaloosa. Go, Jeff. Love your commentary. She commented on Jeff Spiegel's segment and appreciate all the feedback on the app. And a reminder that tomorrow I'll be back at Innisfree Irish Pub in the morning for Fridays at the Free, live from 9 to 11. And slide on in. I know a lot of the people that listen to the show are going to be helping out Robbie Glenn with the Striker Strong Golf Course tournament over in Bessemer tomorrow at Frank House. But if you're in town and want to swing by to see me, just come to that side door over by the stage, and you can get in there and hang out with me in the morning. And also our Bama Football Trivia Giveaway presented by T-Town Menswear, T-Town Gallery, University Mall will give away another great prize tomorrow. And I also got some other giveaways that I'm lining up, Chase, some good ones that we'll talk about next week. Some good Texas Roadhouse is going to be helping us out with some giveaways. Rock and Roll Sushi. Oh, Chase is just perking up over there. So a lot of good stuff that we're planning here for the Gary Harris Show. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. Catch me on TV tonight with local sports on WVUA 23. Back here tomorrow from Innisfree Irish Pub, Fridays at the Free, the TGIF edition. I'll talk to you at 9 a.m. The Miller's Edge is coming up next for Chase Brumfield. I'm Gary Harris. Have a great Thursday, everybody. His cold hand, as he slowly walked by.